This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jin Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of August 12th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday morning is my buddy Jim Allen. Happy Olympic Sunday, or final Sunday of the Olympics, we hope. Don't extend these things.
I'm back. First of all, I want to apologize for not being there for John last week. It was weird. But the Olympics have been going on, and it's been my Olympics. This sounds like a weird thing to say, but they're different from most people's. Basically, in my day job, they put the people who are still in Tokyo on a special floor. And it's like, it's kind of like summer camp. And I'm not eager for it to end, actually. It's fun.
Oh,
it's
really? Fun.
Yeah. I mean, I'm eager to have like normal sleep routines, but because I'm doing the day shift, I come in at noon and I stay till midnight and do regular sports and help out with the Olympics. I do the Olympic stuff that happens here at afternoon time, Japan.
Okay. All right.
And cover the Japanese sports all day. So, it's fun, and it's quiet when I want it to be quiet, and they bring us food. It's like, it is like summer camp.
It's interesting.
All I'm missing is a campfire.
Interesting. Well, let's get something straight. You were available last week, and you did record, and you did some nice work. You could have recorded. Yeah. What's that?
Well, we did record, or we didn't record, actually. We did. We are frozen.
We spoke.
Yeah, we did. We tried to record a show, but the recording process didn't work.
All right. Well, we do have an interview on this week's show. We've got Ariel Martinez of Nippon Ham via Claudio Rodriguez doing the interpretation for us. And then we're going to go rocking with Roki. And then we're going to go straight to the high heat and have a party with that. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
What you're going to hear is a reasonable facsimile, not a great reasonable facsimile.
Quiet question asking, yes.
Yeah, and the very quiet question in trying in my summer camp, my summer camp, trying not to be loud and obvious, trying to sound like I was in the office and not at the ballpark, all excited. So I sound particularly tepid, more so than normal. So please apologize. And but I really enjoyed talking to Ariel Martinez, and it was fascinating to hear things. I mean, I have had players tell me these things before about how Japanese baseball works. I've had Japanese managers tell me, I've had Japanese catchers and pitchers tell me this, and executives, but it was so fun to hear it from the very, very rare perspective of a catcher, because there've been basically one regular imported catcher in Japan, in Japanese baseball history. And it was back in the 50s. So He has a rare experience, and let's have a listen.
Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Nippon Ham Fighters slugging first baseman DH catcher Ariel Martinez of Cuba. Thank you for joining us. My first question is, what kind of adjustments have you made in your 2 years with Nippon Ham as you moved from the Central League to the Pacific League?
This year, same as last year, our team has been very good and we have been fighting hard. The difference is that this year I have better knowledge of the Pacific League. But basically things are pretty much the same. They haven't changed much.
You started as a catcher, but had few opportunities behind the plate with Chunichi. And your position here with Nippon Ham has also been uncertain. How do you feel about that? Do you see yourself as a catcher? If you put yourself in their place, why do you think it is hard for Japanese teams to let a non-Japanese catch?
Well, it wasn't my decision to not play as a catcher. The coaches decided that. I don't know why. I'm okay with it, though. It doesn't concern me. The most important thing is to be able to play in any position and help the team. Regarding being a foreign catcher, I don't think it's too difficult. Obviously, there is a language barrier, but I also believe that the Japanese tend to be narrow-minded when trying new things. When I'm the catcher and I want to communicate with the pitcher, we need an interpreter, but it looks like they don't like that. They don't want to try that. They prefer to use the Japanese catcher so they can talk directly to them. I think that's the biggest obstacle. But the game itself is easy to play. Whenever I played as a catcher, I did well. I got many wins and I called the pitch as well, so I don't think it's too difficult.
When you were with the Dragons, I often saw you on TV speaking one-on-one with the Japanese pitchers. You tried so hard to communicate, but the team still wanted a Japanese catcher, it seems.
From my part, and from the part of any foreign catcher, I don't think there is a problem. We're here and we're willing to play and show our abilities. But Japanese pitchers usually reject us because they already have a battery set up with a Japanese catcher and they seem afraid to make changes and lose the game because of it. When I was with Junichi, I kept trying to fit in and become a good catcher for them. But it wasn't my decision to stay on that role. Again, whenever I played as a catcher, I did well. I even helped in defense and with my bat as well.
Yes, yes. In Japan, it seems that regardless what happens, the catcher is the one who's held responsible for every defensive failure.
The Japanese pitchers who are planning to move to MLB in the future are less afraid, in my opinion. They would have no problem with working with me. In fact, they would ask for me to catch for them. Another problem is that in Japan, the games are usually very close. The scores are usually 0-0 or 1-0, 2-0 or something like that. So the coaches place a lot of trust on their catchers to keep the score close. Therefore, foreign catchers have to be very good defensively to be able to get a chance to play. It can't be anybody. It has to be a good defensive catcher to be able to win the trust of the coaches. There are many things to consider when using a foreign catcher. Foreign players in general are brought here because of their offense. They don't think of them or they don't think about them in terms of defense. They usually put them in left field or first base, and when the game gets to the sixth or seventh inning and they already have one or two hits, then they take them out to reinforce the defense. It looks like they don't trust them in defense. I believe they don't trust our defense in any position. It's not only the catchers.
Last of all, did you learn anything from the WBC?
The WBC was a great experience for me. The most important thing is that I realized that the level of the Japanese league is very strong. There are many good players from different countries. Japan had a great level compared to them. It was a beautiful experience because I got to face lots of good American players. I also realized that their level of baseball is not too far from the level we see in Japan. I didn't get to learn too much because the tournament was very short.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much, Mr. Martinez. Looking forward to seeing you next time I get a chance to go to the ballpark.
And thank you so much, Claudio. What yeoman's work he did for us. So thank you so much.
He did. He got so much energy into that. I'm embarrassed. Stop embarrassing me, Claudio, again. But thanks again.
Yeah.
So your thoughts?
Wow. Just wow. Now, a lot of us like to speculate about what's going on. And, you know, we can see what's happening. And I saw when Junichi shifted Martinez to the outfield and had him trying out at first base and working over there and, you know, any place but catcher. And it just seemed like they just let him go. They just let him float away. And sure, I mean, where to start with this? I don't know. Junichi's obviously the team that shies away from import catchers maybe the most. So I don't even know why. And I don't know why I'm saying that because I think, you know, you would think if they bring a guy in to catch that they actually want him to catch. Okay. But that's not really, it doesn't seem to be the case. And as well as this guy hits, and with them perennially finishing in last place, what was the actual risk of putting in the time to help him develop as a catcher and help him develop his language skills so that there isn't that kind of, I don't know, apprehension or anxiousness or whatever it is that, that the pitchers are experiencing? They've been finishing in last the whole time. So what was the risk? There was like zero risk for them to actually put in for a guy who can hit. Okay, so I mean, instead of finishing 25 games out of first, they were afraid to finish 30 back. I mean, what are we talking about here? So it doesn't make sense in that respect. And I can't imagine why they would bring a catcher in and then tell them to play other positions and try to work them in other positions. I always joke, and this it just the pain that I experienced hearing this interview, you know, it really hit me in the chest, if you know what I'm saying here. It wasn't that they meaning the Dragons. It wasn't the Dragons thought that the guy couldn't play. They just couldn't figure out how to use him. And so that's what really hurts. Like, he's a capable, he's obviously a competent player. And not to say that the fighters are doing any better, because they're not playing him at catcher either, but they're playing him. You know, he's not a DH all the time. He's playing some first base. He's capable of playing left field. So the pain with each statement he made about the pitchers being afraid or the teams being apprehensive or all this stuff, then don't bring him in as a catcher. Say, we're going to bring you in, and we know you can catch, but we want you to do this or something else. So it's torment for the player. It's torment for us, the fans. And I don't understand it. It seems like there's no plan. So, yeah. His Japanese, if you think about it, if you let him catch, even if it's on the farm for a while and whatever, for the three seasons that they've been finishing last or next to last place in the Central League, his Japanese would be much better. You get a lot of production. He gets to establish a rapport with these young pitchers, all of them, and the veteran pitchers. And if there's a veteran pitcher who prefer to work with a more veteran catcher, then that could be his day off. You know, each week, because he's not going to catch every game anyway. I mean, there were plans out there. There were ways to go about it. And I love seeing him be productive. I love seeing Martinez hit and do well with the fighters, but it really does hurt. So it just gives more insight to the Bass-Ackward thinking in Nagoya. And, you know, I don't know. It kind of blows up all the claims that teams use, you know, wanting to put players in the best position to be successful. Because if the Dragons have a catcher and they don't want him to catch, or you could tell that there was some angst with him, that and this is via Claudio saying it, because I had this plan, everyone. I was going to take the Spanish and put it in the background and play it, you know, very low. But I was going to have to go through and cut up the whole interview so that you guys could hear some of the Spanish too and hear Ariel Martinez explain in his own words. And I know we have some Spanish speaking listeners. That was the plan, but things are hectic around here and I didn't have time to do the cut up of the Spanish to make the time work. So it didn't work out, but that was I asked Jim to send me the file in Spanish so I could do that. But anyway, through Claudio, I think we could hear a little bit of the angst of Martinez saying, you know, that it's frustrating because they don't really want to give you that trust. The team doesn't want to give you that trust. You know, you're a competent catcher. And he said he called good games and they won some games with him as the catcher. And I think when you're a catcher, that's really a sense of pride, is, you know, you might get some hits here and there. You might contribute on the offensive end, but there's so much to run. You've got to get the defensive infield in the right spots. You've got to make sure when there's a runner on who has the ability to steal, you have to make sure everybody is alert and in place, and you have to make the throw, and you have to get the pitcher to get you the ball in a good time, or enough time to actually throw down the second. There's a lot to do. There's a lot of responsibility. It's not only swinging the bat. And, you know, it just, I don't know, Bass-Ackward thinking in the way. Anyway, I could go on forever. What did you think?
very briefly, very little of what of what I'm going to say is was left out of the comments as we were speaking. But and I would note that Claudio's interpretation was a little different from his interpreter's interpretation, which is natural because language is a very personal thing.
Language and also the filtering that goes on with teams. So I think that was part of it, though.
The interpreter, Claudio said narrow-minded, and the Spanish interpretation was hard-headed. The interpretation of the interpreter was hard-headed.
Yeah.
So, okay, I've got a little, variations on the same theme. But leaving that aside, I was a thoroughly enjoyable interview. But what you said is exactly true. And my comments will be more about your analysis, and which I think is spot on. But I also think the Dragons are a situation where they've run out of money because they used to be flush with money until the newspaper business hit a trough about 2008, when the international financial crisis and the internet taking over, it just spun the Japanese newspaper business into a funk. They stopped paying for big free agents, which had been the Dragons' success of that era, that decade, was fueled by Hiromitsu Ochiai's management and the ability to bring in to sign players that other teams, noticeably the Yokohama Bay Stars, weren't willing to pay more to.
Right.
So they picked up good import players there. They picked up, and then they have tremendous scouting and player. They have a tremendous scouting system, so they know talent. But the interesting thing to me, so they have all these players coming in, but without the money, the Dragons' top management. And I have this on conversations with people who've dealt with the Dragons' front office in terms of agents and players, is that they are a very sad and confused lot. One, the international and player acquisition side is very sharp, but top management is saying, how can we cut corners?
Right.
And those things are smashing into each other. And the last thing I would have to say about it is, yes, I think your analysis was spot on about the way teams operate. And I, as I said, I've had this experience. People have told me in Japanese baseball, one of the foundations of the thinking of Japanese baseball is that the catcher is there to control the game. And and you've experienced this with any big game, any postseason game or pennant clinching situation, playoff clinching situation. When they talk about the catchers, they'll say, almost like it's on the cue card, the manager doesn't really care what the catcher hits today. It's all about his defense. It's all about his controlling the game. And I know I've told this story before about the import pitcher throwing a hanging curve for a home run and having the catcher blamed for the pitcher throwing a hanging curve.
Yeah.
So that's just the way that's the way they roll in Japan. They wobble, I think, logically. Anyway, so the last thing, and then the last thing is, I think Ariel Martinez went from a team that's really good at scouting catchers and scouting amateurs and acquiring them, and then taking those, using their time with Chunichi as tryouts, so that other teams can pick them clean.
Yeah.
And went to a team that's really good at signing a lot of catchers who they want to play other positions.
Sort of different ends of, or different spots on the spinning wheel, I guess.
Yeah.
Not different ends of the spectrum.
I think the fighters typically look for hitters, and then they look for catchers who can hit, so that those catchers they figure, oh, well, you've proved you can catch. Let's see if you can play left field.
Right.
They've typically got about three catchers in the daily lineup.
Yeah. I mean, yes. What's something I've been noticing and commenting on, but it's working for them and that's fine. Mm-hmm. One other thing, just hearing Martinez say that, you know, essentially they're putting a lesser player on the field because of language purposes, because of optics. They don't want to have an interpreter run out to the mound for the meeting. You know,
I think it's worse than that. I think it's they don't want to be blamed if the game goes south and the catcher is an import. I think it's less than the optics. It's like because Japan runs on blame. And if they lose a game and the import catcher makes a mistake, well, that's the, you know, if a Japanese catcher makes a mistake, it's the catcher's fault. If an import catcher makes a mistake, it's the manager's fault.
Interesting. Yeah, it's all lame, you know.
It's with a capital L.
Yeah, lame blame excuses and all these other things. I you know, that's part of the risk. And don't bring a guy in who's a catcher and ask him to play catcher, but tell him not to play catcher, you know, essentially. And then pitchers being concerned about the language, that shouldn't be a thing. Because we see when these Japanese pitchers go to the States, they don't have a problem. Now, a lot of them don't speak much English at all, especially when they go over there. So if it doesn't bother them over there, and I know everybody's different, so this is not a cookie cutter statement across the board or a generalization, but in most instances, it should not be a thing because you've gone over all the scouting reports and everything. This is just a reminder, or a guy's coming out to say, relax a little bit, or, you're holding the ball, your release point is here. Or he's giving you some advice or some tips or something like that. And the catchers can learn all that. You know, Martinez was speaking Japanese. He's going to learn all the jargon and everything that's related to talking to pitchers. So that just really shouldn't be a thing. So I'm just deeply disappointed even more at the Dragons, and
that's all that's saying something.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we don't see Martinez catching in Hokkaido either. So I can't say it's all about the Dragons that they're the worst or the terrible in this situation,
but they're normal in that respect, I think.
Yeah, but they certainly gave away a talent for nothing.
Yep.
Because of these things, and that's bad. Yeah, but I found this whole discussion hugely enlightening. I'm so glad you're able to do it. I'm so glad Claudio, again, thank you, buddy, was able to do the translation. And I just asked him, hey, you know what? Because I think in the beginning he sent us the text, which takes more time, you know, to type out the text. And I thought, you know, maybe he did that because he was concerned about the time it would take or me having to edit it. And then I assured him editing is really easy. So if you want to say something over, just pause and read it over again and I'll clean it up. And I sent you the file yesterday. Did you get a chance to listen to the cleaned up
version? Of course.
Okay. All right. So he did a good job. I thought it was awesome. So we wouldn't have been able to do it.
Claudio was awesome.
Yeah. So, and thank you for getting the interview and just how hugely enlightening. I hope everybody really enjoyed that as well. So yeah, thanks to everybody involved.
Yeah, and I'm going to put the original audio on my blog, so you can listen to it there for all the Spanish speakers.
Okay, yeah, because I know we have at least a couple, so that'd be awesome. All right, so as I assured everyone last week when we had technical issues that we would not plan very much, and so we didn't plan very much, but we have to go rocking with Roki Sasaki because he did throw on Thursday night. And again, with the Olympics going on, I didn't get to see much of this game. I had it on. I noticed early on he didn't look sharp, and he went up against the best team in the league, or the first place team in the league, however you want to see it. And didn't look good from the get-go. And SoftBank won 6-3. Sasaki goes 5 innings for the second consecutive game. A career worst 9 hits allowed. He struck out nine. He walked one. No hit batter, so that was good. But he allowed three runs, and all of them were earned. So my takeaway from this start, it just fits in with the whole saga of this season with him, and that there's something weird going on. Now, he looked fatigued again, and that could be because he's not pitching against top team or hadn't been pitching against top team talent for a while. And so it's hot. There are a lot of excuses or factors that we could put in, but he just did not. He looked fatigued to me. I suspect, and it's pure speculation on my part, that something is going on with the relationships. I don't know if it's the coaching staff, ownership, the manager in particular, or the pitching coach in particular, but or he's actually really hurt and there's something going on with that, but something doesn't jive and it's manifesting itself in a lack of sharpness and a lack of the Roki Sasaki that I'm used to seeing. The guy whose fastball, if it's not pinpoint, it's too fast for you to catch up to it most of the time, or the splitter or forkball, whatever you want to call it, that he uses as an off-speed pitch that he can sometimes throw for strikes, but usually get guys to swing at because it looks like a strike for a long time before it darts somewhere. But I didn't see many pitches like that. His velocity is down in general. So it doesn't look like he's having a wasted season, in my opinion.
Hmm. Interesting. And I can't disagree with anything. And even his manager, Masato Yoshiwa, seemed a little perplexed. He said, you know, they were hitting his fastball and I can't figure it out because his fastball looked good to me. Well, yeah, there was one. It was as his fastball is, it's sometimes really straight. I would say it's generally really straight.
Hmm.
It has more arm side run than he would want. And I was looking at the pitches that were hit. And in the two run inning that started the trouble, of course, with one out, there was a grounder to first that hit the bag and sailed over first baseman Neftali Soto's head.
Yeah.
And that started things. And then Takuya Kai, the Hawks catcher, probably had the best swing on a tough pitch in the game. He hit a fastball at the bottom of the zone and smashed it. I don't remember if it was on the ground or in the air, but he hit it well for a single. And then the last one was not the fastball that got hit. He hung a forkball in the middle of the zone, and that got tagged for a double. Although I think it was a double. It was one of those really iffy doubles because there was the scorer decided that the runner was on second before the run scored.
Okay.
but it was really, you know, I didn't see that run. I think the ball actually got into the infield past second before the runner took second. It was basically on the throw, but, you know, it's all about timing. So anyway, that was that. So I think, yeah, the fastball was not great. The command was not great. And as you see with pitchers with really good stuff, who have a reputation with really good stuff, the batters will come in trying to look for specific pitches and gear up for, you know, they can't handle everything. Nobody can handle everything. So they have to,
right.
They have to compartmentalize. And some guys were looking fastball and some guys were looking forkball. They were looking for mistakes and they did their best with what they got, but they put good swings on some mediocre fastball. I don't think the fastball was that great. And this is it's just one of the things Japanese baseball says. I'm surprised they didn't say the pitch that Kai hit was high because he hit it well. You know, typically in Japan, if you hit a fastball, all like, oh, the pitches were up. Well, this one was at the knees, dude.
Yeah.
And it was an okay. I mean, the location was good. It wasn't a good fastball, but the location was fine. So, no, the fastball is straight. It has been straight. It's been straight since day one. But he's got to be locating, and he wasn't locating. I think it was less fastball than it was more location.
Yeah, well, I mean, my personal opinion is if he's letting things get between him and performance, then he needs some more time in MPV to go through some more stuff. before he thinks about going to the States, because you get a lot more, I guess, extracurricular activity that could interfere with your performance in the States. You know, there's going to be so much more change anyway. You know, he had obviously had a taste of being in the States and performing with the WBC, but he wasn't great then. And I don't think guys can ascend to the major league level with luggage like this. It's not going to work. So he's going to have to figure out how to pitch through and work through issues when the street's not clear. You know, he's got to drive around some obstacles or get out of the car, move some things around, or whatever he has to do to get things clear so that he can have a better path to the major leagues, because this doesn't look right. And I don't know what it is, but it started with, you know, he's injured, and then it's upper body fatigue or some vague kind of explanation, and it has gone on with, now he could be hurt, you know, and that's another thing. And if that's the case too, he probably needs to heal up before he goes through. Like I said, it's a lot of speculation, but something is off, and I don't like what I'm seeing, whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he looked fit, but because nobody was missing his fastball, he came out of the game less well. In his previous start, Yoshi was reaching for the bullpen phone to check the connection when he saw some balls hit well.
Yeah.
And this time he didn't need that connection. He could see he was up to 90 pitches in five innings.
35 innings, like, yes.
So he thought, okay, this is, you know, enough of that.
Yeah.
And it's SoftBank, and I know Shuto Ishikawa was the opposing pitcher, but still, it's still SoftBank, and Lotte's offense is unpredictable. It's more of a time bomb than an offense.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
Okay.
All right. Let's make a two-seam transition. We've got one note, and then, as promised, we will get to as much high heat as we can do. Koshien Stadium was celebrated recently for turning 100 this year, and so we recorded this segment last week twice. But again, Jim, your first or fondest memory of Koshien Stadium?
Okay, and it was on the Japanese national holiday called Keido no Hi, which is the Respect for the Elderly Day, which is kind of actually my holiday in Japan.
Because you love old people? You love respect.
No, neither of the above. I'll get into personal details, but
you have appropriate respect for respect.
No, but the day I arrived in Japan on September 15th, 1984, I didn't know it was a national holiday, but when I changed, I arrived at Haneda Airport from San Francisco, and my colleague and I boarded a Japan Airlines flight for Osaka, where we were going to be met and then taken to our destination for work. And when we got on the Japan Airlines plane, we were handed a Japanese wrapping cloth, a furoshiki, for the reason that they were giving all the passengers these gifts for Respect for the Elderly Day. And I want to know is, how the heck did Japan Airlines know that on that day, this 24-year-old kid would be old enough to collect his pension in Japan? So anyway.
Interesting.
So in 19 years later, I'm at, it wasn't the 15th of September anymore, because they moved it around to be a three-day holiday. And I was at Koshien Stadium to watch the Hanshin Tigers to see if they could clinch their first Central League pennant since the year after I came to Japan, 1985. And it was my first time at Koshien, and it was a crisp autumn afternoon with that sort of late, hazy, yellowish sunshine as the game went on. It was a late, I think, a 2 o'clock start, and it was natural grass outfield, dirt infield, and the stadium is an absolute gem. Even when it was a little grimy then, It was still a gem. It was the third oldest major league park in the world. And the thing that got me was, A, the atmosphere, would be wondering how teams ever score in the top of the seventh inning at Koshien when the fans are blowing up their jet balloons. And they're popping and whizzing.
Right.
While pitchers are delivering their pitches. And of course, from the press seats, they're particularly loud because you're under the overhang and they're reverberating.
Right.
It's quite dramatic. So that was my first experience at Koshien, and my best.
Yeah.
I have a few others, but that was the best.
Okay, my first memory is going there as a fan in the late 90s, and I got to see Alonzo Powell there at the end of his career, and he was with the Tigers, and I was sitting up in the stands, not directly behind the plate, but kind of high up, and I was thinking, at some point, a rat was going to pop out and ask me to leave his home, you know, get out of here. But my first impression of the field, because I really had never seen a pro field that was all dirt like that, and it was just, I had seen it on TV a lot of times, but it was more attractive and more picturesque in person to see how clean and how beautiful the infield dirt was. And it's really dark dirt. It's not typical. I don't think that dirt that you would find any, you know, in typical places, but, you know, the grass infields are lovely, but I was actually struck at just how impressive that was. And I had a good time, and I don't remember the team that the Tigers were playing, but I think they won. And just going there, like I said, I just went there as a fan, as a friend, because I lived in Nagoya. I had a friend who moved down to Osaka, and he said, hey, I've got some tickets for the weekend series, let's go. So I went down for a weekend series and watched a couple games. So beautiful stadium, beautiful ballpark, inside and out. So really, really happy birthday to Koshien. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so somewhere in my head, it seems like we talked about this before somewhere, Jim. Well, we got an email from Tony in Busan, and he asks, why does SoftBank bat Kensuke Kondo fifth? Classic baseball lineup construction would have Kondo bat third or potentially fourth to bat cleanup, while modern lineup construction would have him batting second or third to maximize his ABs across the season. Regardless, having him bat fifth feels a little too low. I looked back at box scores just over the past 2 weeks, and I guess this would be maybe 3-4 weeks ago, and found games where he lost an at-bat batting fifth that he would have had if he were higher in the lineup. Equally, SoftBank is going to clinch first place early in September, and Kondo will probably win the Pacific League MVP if it's not broke, .. So thoughts, he says. Jim?
Well, there is one thought, and I'm guessing Los Angeles Dodgers manager Dave Roberts had the same one with his leadoff, ostensibly his leadoff hitter, Mookie Betts, coming back from the injured list soon. He said, you know, put Shohei Ohtani back at second. He says, nah, leave him where he is. Leave him where he is. He didn't want, he's producing. So just don't, if it's not fixed, don't break in it. And
I like that.
Or if it's not broken, don't break in it. I don't know. But anyway, so there's that. The idea being you give your best, and he said it, you know, give your best hitters more plate appearances, which is if you've got a DH and you don't have the pitcher clogging up things at the end of the lineup, that makes perfect sense. You know, just bat them all at the top of the run, not worry about the rollover. So there's that. But my feeling is, yeah, the best place in without the gory details, the best place for Kondo would be pretty much everywhere. Lead off, he would bat less with runners on. But yeah, put him behind a good leadoff hitter batting second would be great. Third is probably the worst play, not the worst, but a least optimal place. I would think the best place for him would be second, fourth, or fifth. So fifth is not a bad place. It leads off a lot of innings. So he gets one skill. And if two runners get on in the first inning, he's got two guys on base for him. So it's not a bad one. It will cost him a few. It cost him probably 10 or 15, 20 plate appearances over the course of a season, but it's not a huge loss. It's not silly. Batting him third would be silly.
Would be silly?
Yep.
Why?
Why? Because the cost of the advantage of having somebody with a high on-base percentage and a high slugging average third, when very often they're basically there with two outs in the first inning, is not optimal.
Okay. All right. For me, I'm thinking fifth, that's the heart of the order. Actually, I'm thinking conservatively. I don't want him batting too much because the more exposure he gets to some of the pitchers, the batting average could suffer potentially. Because again, you're talking about a guy who's successful 3 out of 10 times. So 7 times he's going to go up there and not have success ostensibly. So I think he's perfect at the 5-hole. I think the SoftBank Hawks have really good table setters. Kondo is more of a gap-to-gap guy who gets his share of home runs and is doing some damage that way. But I think their lineup, I wouldn't bat him cleanup, but I don't think losing at bats is the issue. I think what they're looking at and what I would be looking at is how can he be most productive with his at bats? And I think he can be really productive with guys on base because pitchers don't want to face him with guys on base. They get nervous.
Mm.
Fielders, a lot of times it's two outs and there's a runner in scoring position when he comes to the plate. So they're thinking, well, at least knock it down if there's a runner at third, we've got to make this play at first. And so it puts pressure on everybody on the opposing team when he comes up with these guys on base. And he's getting his 4 or 5 trips to the plate every night. So I don't know what the metrics say about getting an extra at bat here and there once a week, 2 weeks here and there, how much impact it's going to have. I like where he is right now. And what did you say? If it's fixed, don't break in it. I like it.
Yeah,
they're not slowing down, and like you said, Tony, they have a magic number already. We're probably going to see them clinch in the next 3 weeks or so with their magic number in the 30s here, and they score a lot of runs. So there's really no reason to panic and try to get more, squeeze more out of what they're doing. They're leading the Pacific League in runs. Let me see if they're also leading the Central League. Probably not. Oh, they are. Yeah, they're leading Japan in runs scored, so I don't think they have a problem. So I'm with Jim. Get him off his feet as much as you can and save the bullets. That's another thing to think of for a guy who's 30-something. You don't want to get him out there too much and have him run into bases and expose himself to injury. So I think they're doing really well with the number 5-hole when he bats there. I know that he has batted in other slots in the lineup as well, but again, they're really good. The Hawks are getting runners on base, and you get runners on base in front of him and he can do damage and he can hurt other teams. So I'm fine with the 5-hole. Let's go to Niels. He sent an email a while back and he sent a pretty long one. So he says, first of all, dear John and Jim, I would like to thank you for addressing my last email on your podcast. Currently, I am reading the 2009 edition of Robert Whiting's You Gotta Have Wah. I haven't finished the book yet, though. Apart from being quite insightful in general, there is something that I would like to ask you about. It is mentioned several times by Whiting that the Yomiuri Giants are very powerful in Japanese baseball and have a lot of influence. Is that still the case? I'm asking because something possibly related to that came to my attention. The Pacific League has 2 YouTube channels, one in Japanese and one in English, the English one to some extent, where one can catch highlight plays and highlights of every Pacific League game. The Central League, in contrast to that, does not seem to have such a channel. At least I could not find one. Do you know why that is? Does it have to do with the Giants' influence? Or are there other reasons why the Central League clubs do not have a common platform on which video material is released? Normally, I would expect a professional sports league to have such a channel. On a similar note, why is Japanese baseball not more interested in reaching a global audience? KBO games, for example, can be watched via SuperLive.com for free outside of South Korea. There does not seem to be anything comparable regarding NPB. Another example is the long-running video game series Pro Yaku Spirits by Konami. there's quite some excitement and following among baseball video game fans for this series. However, the publisher does not even consider releasing the game outside of Japan, and I'm not even talking about an English language version. Yours sincerely, Nils. So he's got a lot there, Jim. The first question about the Giants and their impact.
Yeah, Nils, great. A great line of thinking there. And to put it as well as I can, the Giants still do have a lot of influence. Not quite, you know, the rise of SoftBank has challenged that a little bit, but they're not necessarily, they have been common kindred spirits in some ways. The Giants' thinking has always been, we're in charge. And when asked, you know, we were talking about, I think it was on Twitter or X or Y or Z, I don't remember which platform it was on, but we were discussing how would you encapsulate, you know, nothing says Yomiuri Giants more than, you know, what nothing says Yakult Swallows more than, and so on and so forth. And I know John would have a few choice ones for the Chunichi Dragons, but nice. Nothing says Yomiuri Giants more than, these are the rules, everybody must follow them until we need to change them to suit our best interests.
Mm-hmm.
So the Giants make the rules and then break them or change them as they see fit. Now, one of the rules the Giants made was to petrify the system. This is a long-standing historical theme in Japan. It's how the Tokugawa shogunate ruled for 250-some years, was to basically take the system that was and freeze it so that nobody moves up or down. And they were at the top. So what they did was they made sure that home teams get all the broadcasting rights and income from home games. So there's no sharing. They didn't want any sharing because they were going to have the biggest park, which they didn't, and they were going to have the biggest number of fans, which they didn't. But they were going to get the biggest share of the pie, which they did. And that was that's how Japanese base, there was going to be no joint licensing. Nobody was going to make their thinking was nobody's going to make a dime off us.
Mm.
And that is still the rule in the Central League. And I was talking to somebody who's very knowledgeable about Japanese baseball and MLB, and he said, I think Japan's going to change either because the owner emeritus of the Yomiuri Giants is like 99 years old, Tsuneo Watanabe, and he's going to die.
And are you sure? Because
I know.
We haven't seen him in public eye for a while, but what is going on there? But anyway,
he might be held up with, you know, formaldehyde. He may never die. But as long as he's presumed alive, apparently no changes are allowed.
Hashtag high heat.
Presumed.
And sort of like a... Yeah. So anyway, so there's that. Or the other one was that some team may sell their franchise to a foreign stakeholder, and then when NPB says, sorry, that's not the rules, end up in court over it with somebody who wants to make changes, who wants to really turn on open the spigots. And the last thing I'll say about it is I'll recall an anecdote that Bobby Valentine told me. He was asking around. When he returned to the Lotte Marines in 2004, after being manager of the Mets, he had done some work for ESPN. And ESPN was saying, hey, can we get the American broadcast rights to the Japan series and Japan's crown jewel event? And so he asked his dubious partner, ostensibly the chief executive of the Marines, to float that idea to the NPB owners. And NPB's answer was, put the Japan series on American television? What would happen if we made a mistake and screwed up? We'd be laughingstocks. And that was the answer to that. So one answer is yes, it's all about the Giants trying to petrify the system by forcing other teams to each, you know, by making it difficult for teams to work together. And B, it's about Japanese baseball not wanting to make mistakes in public and fearing and being insecure about the quality of their own product.
Yeah, Giants are very powerful. The influence is there. I was talking to somebody at the office recently and talking about the fact that, yeah, I think the Giants do have a YouTube channel, but they try to limit that kind of access. Some of the other teams have put material or content on X. Some have done YouTube stuff. I don't know how popular it is, but there's no one central spot. And they're not taking, I agree, Nils, they're not taking the think global at local seriously. They don't think outside their own house, essentially, or they try to limit what's going on here. So yeah, they do wield a lot of power. It doesn't make sense. The whole NPB entity should work together, and the commissioners should say, well, we're not going to have one league doing one thing and the other league not following along or not following suit. It should be in lockstep, and it's not. And it just goes to show you that, yeah, there isn't, well, I don't know about division, but there just isn't unity. And that's because it seems like the Yomiuri, having worked there for a long time, I can see it. There are a lot of crusty old ideas in the form of people. And those ideas get not only passed down, it's kind of an ideology that is taught. So the next crusty guy moves up into that position of power, and he just continues what he has learned and how he has been trained. And so the ideas don't change. There's nothing, you know, that's new, and it takes the infusion of young blood. But you know, if there's an infusion of young blood, they give him a transfusion.
Hashtag high heat.
They say, no, you don't think like that. We're the Yomiuri. We do this, and we do this this way. So they train them to, you know, live in the past. And so that's what we have here. And as technology develops and keeps going, we're in the, you know, the digital era. And yet we can't get everybody on the same page doing the same digital dance. It's ridiculous. And it's hard to change. It's very hard to change. You run up against walls. And yes, the Giants' influence is really strong, and the other teams want to do different things, but I don't know how you feel about this, Jim, but it would seem that the other teams don't want to anger the Giants either, so that the relationship goes sour. Like, you know, you can't put our pictures on your YouTube page. You can only show, you know, what your players do, but you have to somehow have it only be the camera be focused on your players and don't show our players doing poorly or something. There could be many ideas.
No, the thing is, because you can only show your home games.
Mm-hmm. That too.
You only have rights to show your home games. So even if you get the Giants streaming channel, you don't get to see, you know, 70, 71 or 72 games a year, because they're not the Giants home games and they don't have the rights to sell them. So this whole thing, you know, in America, if it used to be before base MLB switched from being MLB switched from being America's national pastime's biggest cheerers to return on investment is the golden rule.
Mm-hmm.
And they stopped sending their broadcast teams on the road. The number of teams do that now. That's what you get in Japan. If you like, you know, this group of announcers because they rotate for your team, and you like this group of analysts because they, you know, I want to hear them doing the Giants every day. Well, you can't, because the Giants don't have a road team unless they're Koshien, where they have Yomiuri Television in Osaka sometimes broadcast those games, but other than that, you're out of luck.
Yeah. And as to why they wouldn't have a global facing entity section, and I'm talking about all of MPB, to get their games on an international stage, you know, even if it's YouTube, whether or some kind of streaming service that you know, like MLB at Bat. I think we talked about this before as well on the show. It's because the Central League and the Pacific League just operate differently. And NPB, as I don't know what the commissioner's actual duties are, but if I were commissioner, that's one of the first things I would do. Is I'm like, I would get those two sides in a room and say, look, this is what we're going to do. Like it or love it, hate it or love it. This is what we're going to do, and try to get them on the same page, at least at the very least during the interleague, but get some international play. Because a lot of these, you know, it shouldn't be. When I was a kid, I would hear about Sadaharu Oh, and nobody could say his name right in the States, but I would hear about him, but we never got to see anything highlight wise. We didn't get stories. If you got a story, there was no internet, obviously, but you'd get an occasional story somewhere, maybe on TV or something, about a guy who hits a bunch of home runs. But that's, you know, we're talking the 70s, you know, that's 50 years ago. We should be more progressive and should have progressed to the point where some of these high level stars, like, you know, Shohei Ohtani, before he made his jump over to the States, people should have been able to see him regularly. And some of them were, because the Pacific League was more progressive in terms of Pa-League TV and other sites. But it should be one, and you should have been able to see him every game they wanted to, and on demand and all that stuff. But and the same with the players from the Central League. So if there's a Central League player now, essentially he's invisible. Mm. You know, people don't know who he is, and maybe they saw some interleague play and that's about it. But not that there is some great star out there in the Central League, you know, other than maybe some of the pitchers who are having a great season because maybe the ball is a little bit less juiced than it has been in the past. But anyway, I don't know. And I would like to see the commissioner take over and push, which is impossible, right? Push the Giants aside and say, look, we need to do this because we have a global game. And we just heard Ariel Martinez say that the level is on par. It's very high in compared with the, you know, WBC. After he played in the WBC, he said the level in Japan is very high. So if that's the case, then you have an international product, and you should be, you know, you should figure out a way to monetize that, and also get your league, you know, as crazy as some of the uniforms look on occasion, get your league out there in the world so people can enjoy it, you know?
Mm. No, absolutely.
Okay. All right. So we have another question. We'll leave that one on deck for next week. I don't know about Jim, but I'm a little gun shy. I'm so worried. We are recording with a backup system today. So we've got redundancy going for us. So that should be fun. I don't know how much baseball you got to watch this week. I got to watch a few games. I actually saw the Chunichi Dragons scoring runs in a couple games, you know, more than two.
Yeah.
So that was actually exciting. But
yeah, it was Christmas in August.
Yeah, and I thought, well, they're still going to figure out a way to lose these games. But they didn't. They actually won the games in which they scored some runs, so that was fun. But the Olympics have really taken over. Japan is getting a lot of medals. That makes us busier at work.
I know. I don't mean to be a downer, but we're going.
I do.
But we're at the office. We're going, come in fourth.
Yeah. Same here. And I'm like, gold. And is breakdancing really a sport? What are we doing here? So when they got gold in that too. So yeah, it's taxing, and it makes us busier, but it's all in good fun. You know, we can't root against, I won't root against them actively unless it's basketball, my sport. And that's the one I played. And that's where the referees were so awful that I have not forgiven them for decades for what they did. And I will not root for Japan.
What, 1972?
Oh, stop it.
I remember that.
No, I'm talking about the referees in Japan.
Oh, okay.
Because I played basketball. And
okay.
Just so ridiculous. But yeah, water under the bridge, or so they say. But yeah, so Olympics will be done next week. I'm going to be going on vacation, but I will record from the States. So It's up to Jim to pick a time, but he can pick any time he wants because I don't have anything to do. So let me know when you're ready to record and I'll be there for you. But I'll be all leaving right on Thursday and I'll be gone for about a week and then be back. And then we'll record another show. So I might miss some games. And every time I leave the country, what happens, Jim?
No hitter. Like clockwork.
So I'm expecting a no hitter.
Don't do it. So
gone.
Don't go.
Don't go.
Yeah. Don't go unless it's my day off.
Yeah.
My favorite, the best hit of the game is the one that breaks up the no hitter and keeps me from having to write a no hitter story.
That's the
office. If I'm in the ballpark, that's different.
Yeah, that's different.
That
yeah.
doesn't happen.
Yeah, the beauty of baseball. Give me that two out, eighth inning, no base hit to break it up. All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. Thank you for the questions. Anyone else Indeed. Who has a question? And these were awesome questions. And like I said, we do have one on deck, but we can always handle more. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up on X with the hashtag HighHeat or send questions by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Or you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a note there. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks.